From the heart of rural America, Mount Marty University Nursing presents Health on the Map, a podcast that looks closely at challenges in rural healthcare through in-depth conversations with experts in the field. From accessibility concerns to chronic health conditions, Health on the Map host Mark Long invites advanced practitioners, policymakers, educators, and students on air to uncover the gaps, challenges, and opportunities our rural communities face, including what's being done to make a difference. Join us as we chart the impacts of people working to put rural healthcare on the map.
Welcome back to Health on the Map. I'm your host, Mark Long. Our guest this week is Melissa Magstadt, the Secretary of Health for the state of South Dakota. She served as Secretary of Health after being appointed by Governor Kristi Noem in 2022, but she's no stranger to the Capitol and Pier, having served as a member of the South Dakota House of Representatives from 2011 to 2015. Her public service career is built on a long career of caring for others. She served as a family nurse practitioner for more than 25 years, mostly in Northeast South Dakota. And before that, she was a staff nurse, an education coordinator, and an emergency department nurse. Secretary Magstadt holds degrees from Huron University, South Dakota State University, and notably Mount Marty University. It's nice to welcome an alumna to the microphone. Secretary Magstadt, thank you so much for joining me today.
Good to be here.
Why did you decide to become a nurse?
This is sort of interesting. Back in fifth grade, here on McKinley School, so anybody's out there, hi, McKinley School alumni. Fifth grade, the teachers actually had us a career day, right?
Sure.
So they wanted us to pick something that we'd want to be when we got older. And me and my best friend decided that we wanted to be nurses. So my mom took us down to the thrift store, and they got us a couple of old nursing uniforms, and we wore them to school that day. And she and I both went on to become nurses.
Wow.
She went on to deliver 1,000 babies in OBGYN nursing. And then I went this pathway. So you know what? Never underestimate those little fifth and sixth grade or fourth grade exposures to potential careers could be the root right there.
Yeah,
you never know.
So important. Good and bad. I actually had an experience one time where I had a good government day, and I have degrees in political science and history. And I met the woman who ran that many years later when I was an adult and sort of a community leader. And she really couldn't have cared less that she changed my life when I was in fourth grade. So
she had no idea.
She didn't really care. So you have a much better story than I do. Thank you for sharing. So one of the things we're doing at Mount Marty University is really focusing a lot on rural health. And I know that's obviously your background in being Secretary of Health for South Dakota. I'm sure you spent a lot of time thinking about those issues. What are the one or two most challenging public health issues in our state? And I guess another way of asking that is, what do you spend your time thinking about as Secretary?
So things that I spend my time thinking about, probably, well, and actually our executive team was having this conversation probably a couple months ago that really sort of summed it up. We said, what is going to be the next public health challenge? What will be the next crisis? I mean, we're on the backside of the COVID piece of it, but what's the next public health crisis? And we all came up with this, finally settled on the word complexity. And it's not necessarily that the illnesses are more complex, but the environments and where people live, getting access to care, social determinants of health, which is basically where people live and work and lay down their head at night. Do they have access to healthy foods? Do they have access to things that shore up healthy lifestyles? And then do they have access to care when they need it? So, you know, it's not that the illnesses are more complex, but the environments that what people live and work and play and lay their heads down at night are sometimes the bigger challenge to getting healthcare delivered to those people rather than even just the complexity of an illness.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's absolutely right. And speaking about complexity, you know, our state is increasingly complex. You know, Sioux Falls is one of the fastest growing cities in the country. Rapid City is growing a pretty fast clip. Of course, we know the challenges, health challenges that the reservations have, and much of the rest of the state is declining in population. How do you and your staff sort of work with providers and health systems throughout the state to ensure that the quality of access to care remains during this time of change?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And, you know, I think the first thing that we look at and try to do this, well, and if I were to say, you know, if you're going to your healthcare provider, nurse practitioner, whoever you're going to, they're going to check a set of vital signs on you, right? They're going to check your temperature, they're going to check your blood pressure, and it's going to be just a little bit of an indicator of how you're doing in that moment in time. Well, we do the same thing for the population. We check the vital signs, the temperature of the population, and we do that with health outcomes, that data. So, you know, we have pivoted to become very data-centric so that we're no longer making decisions by gut instinct or what we think or what, you know, we assume works this way, but really focusing on having clean, clear data that not only are we taking in and making sure that it's accurate and true, but we're disseminating that out to the population and the partners and the health systems and Indian health services and tribal leaders, rural communities in ways that are they can use as well, whether that's for program planning or community planning or grant asking for communities. We carry a lot of data and making that relevant to the conversations of whoever is interested in helping us with health of the community and health of their tribal entities. We've got to make that data very transparent and in the hands of the people who need it. So, you know, the first thing we start with is the data piece. That way we can check the temperature of what's going on in Rapid City versus what's going on in Pine Ridge versus what's going on in Watertown. Every community and every area has a different set of temperature that's taken. And that outcome really helps us drive what areas do we need to focus on? What do we need to lift up? What interventions need to be done for this area? But maybe this area over here needs something completely different. And so assessing this with good data that is relevant down to the county level, so that you can actually make very good programming and interventions that meet the needs of those various communities. You know, 64 out of 66 of our communities are considered rural, but some of our areas are even to the point of frontier. Mm-hmm. You know, I chuckle at some of the interstate conversations that I'm in with the health officers from other states, and they talk about the, you know, the struggles of delivering healthcare in rural entities. I said, you know, think about taking it to frontier areas. That's a whole nother level of healthcare access, and not only healthcare access delivered to the folks, but them being able to reach either specialty services or primary services, or even the services of delivering babies. In some of our places, it's 60, 90 minutes, 2 hours for areas to deliver babies. And, you know, put that in the context of that access to care, babies still get delivered and born and moms still get pregnant in very frontier areas. So delivering that care is going to look way, very different than it does even in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, I'm sure your colleagues around the country don't fully appreciate, you know, I for instance, a colleague from New Jersey or Maryland isn't going to fully appreciate some of the challenges mm-hmm. that you have in some of these frontier communities and counties. So I would imagine that communication, going back to that conversation we had earlier about complexity, that communication between the local providers and the state is critical.
You know what? And that's to your whole point is that, you know, we have 356 or something employees in the Department of Health. There's 905,000 people who live in South Dakota. 356 people working in the Department of Health cannot possibly impact the whole public health of the entire state. So our reliance on people with the same sort of heart for delivering health care to the people of South Dakota, we partner, link arms with those people who have that same sort of mindset. And I said, anyone wants to get in the boat and row with me, I am totally inviting them on board. So those partnership pieces are critical to us. And having spent this last year really shoring those up even more, we've been working, you know, we've had that partnership mentality for a long time, but expanding on those and connecting with not only the partners that we've traditionally had, but expanding into partnerships that maybe weren't as strong before, or maybe we've never had before, and discover that these were places that we could connect together. and can do things together, and understanding that we certainly cannot accomplish it alone. And so shoring up what our traditional partners are, shoring up what our non-traditional partners have, we've discovered to be, has been really critical this past year.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, we spend a lot of time at Mount Marty talking about advanced practice nursing. So I don't know if you know this or not, Mount Marty has the second largest graduate nursing program in the state. And so we think about, we love physicians, love what they're doing. There aren't enough of them in our rural communities. So we really try and educate and train nurse practitioners at the highest level, because in many cases, nurse practitioners and physician's assistants are going to be those primary care providers in rural areas. So mm-hmm. you're a nurse practitioner yourself. How do you think the roles of nurses, both the RN level and the APRN level, have changed in the last few years? And what do you think the future of nursing practice is like?
You know, it's really sort of interesting is that what's the new practice look like? It actually kind of looks like the old practice. You know, there was a time when it was nurses and advanced practice nurses. You think back to, there was a Mary Breckenridge in Kentucky, right? She was one of the first nurse midwives, developed the Frontier Nursing Services in Kentucky, and went into at the Appalachian Mountains and started helping deliver babies up in those mountains, right? Dropped the maternal and infant mortality rate significantly. Happened in Alabama with a Margaret Smith, and she, out of the 3,000 babies that she delivered, she did not lose one mother out of 3,000.
Wow.
So I think honestly, as we're evolving back into getting nurses out into the frontier and rural areas and putting them into those communities is actually return to the way healthcare used to be. Going into the communities, being connected right in the neighborhoods. You know, there's a lot of even moving into home visiting nurses, right? So we have this program called Bright Start, and it is in every county in this state, but we send nurses who are specifically trained in maternal and child pregnancy care and early child development that come alongside these mothers and these little families for all the way through pregnancy in the first 2 years, and coming right into the home and helping establish those first, 1,000 days of life from pregnancy, conception, all the way to the 2 years, 2 years old is the first 1,000 days of life, and having nurses who are right into the home with those families makes a massive impact. You know, 71% of our Bright Start moms who were smokers quit smoking. That is a huge quit rate that, you know, any quit program would love to say that they have a 71% quit rate for tobacco use. In those same Bright Start moms, 95% of them are up to date on their childhood immunizations, you know, and that's a struggle that we're kind of dealing with in South Dakota here is a drop-off rate of our childhood immunizations. So for me, using the army of healthcare providers to the top of their licensure and getting them into the places where healthcare access is a struggle is a key intervention for healthcare right now. But like I said, this is not a new idea. This is an old idea, just redone.
Hmm. So some recent research shows that nationwide residents in rural areas are more likely to die from diabetes than those in urban or suburban areas, which I actually thought was tragic, yet fascinating at the same time. And that's one of the reasons we at Mount Marty have established our graduate program in endocrinology for nurse practitioners, only the second one in the nation. How can we, as a society, as a state, get a handle on diabetes?
Sure, that's a great question. And actually, diabetes is one of, I think, the best example of the partnership that happens between healthcare providers and the patient themselves, right? You know, because diabetes is one of those types of illnesses that it really is dependent on what the patient is doing day in and day out, right? And the community and the environment that they live in. So if, you know, 20% of healthcare outcomes are related to the medications that we do, like the healthcare, actual healthcare that we do, 30 to 40% or so is based on the patient's behavior. And 40 to 50% is social determinants of health. So people where they live, work, you know, lay their head down, play, and go to school at. So the environment that people are living, what they're doing day in and day out, is a major impact when it comes to diabetes outcomes. So, you know, let's just take that, you know, if we took it down the road just a little bit and we went to a community where someone is struggling with diabetes and all they have, and nothing against the C-stores, but all they have is a C-store for access to food, right? And C-stores, you know, they're not set up to have fresh produce. They're not set up to have a large variety of fresh types of foods for people to eat. So now you have prepackaged foods as your only access point. So now you're talking to a patient about their diet and, you know, sort of healthy eating, but their access to healthy foods is going to be a massive barrier for them to do well in diabetes care. So then it becomes even the next step for the healthcare provider, whether it's nurse practitioners, nurses, whatever, to start looking at where the person lives and spends all their time. And if we're not thinking about our patients outside of the exam room or outside of the hospital bed and sending them back into this environment, we're going to be personally frustrated that patients aren't doing as well as we'd like them to. Our patients are going to be personally frustrated because they want to be healthy too, right? People want to look and feel their best, right? And if you have tons of barriers to get over with and your outcomes are not changing for the better, so much discouragement and frustration and all that can be a part of it. And diabetes, I think, probably is one of the biggest examples of the healthcare patient partnership that needs to be in lockstep, because you're only going to see that patient once every 15 minutes every 3 months, right? You check their blood level, redo their prescriptions, whatever they need. But it really behooves healthcare to now get in with the patient in the world that they're living in the environment that they work and sleep and play and go to school in, and be enmeshed into that environment if you're going to actually have healthy outcomes when it comes to diabetes care and basically all chronic illness. But diabetes care, you know, pretty impactful because, you know, we also have a disparate population of our Native Americans who suffer with diabetes more so than their white South Dakota counterparts. So it is very relevant to South Dakota.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a multifaceted problem that I think communities together need to work on. But I agree that that relationship between the provider and the patient in managing that condition is truly important. I'll pivot too. Let's also stay in the behavioral health sort of sphere here, or health behaviors, and talk a little bit about mental health and that relationship to physical health in our communities. Most school and higher education administrators say they spend a lot of time working with kids on behavioral health issues. I sometimes wonder if school counselors have any time to work with college planning because they're dealing with the behavioral health issues from the counseling side in their schools. I certainly see it in higher education too, this mental health challenges with young people. But I also then see and talk to a lot of churches who have programs working with older adults and loneliness. So it seems like throughout society, we have some issues with mental health challenges. How can communities and organizations work to improve those outcomes?
I think one of the best things that we've started doing is considering that that mental health is healthcare, that it is the same thing. You know, when I went to school a bazillion years ago, you know, there was the healthcare part, and then there was almost the siloed mental health, emotional health type of piece. And the perspective of bringing it all back together to being the patient is the biological, physical part, the mental, the emotional, the spiritual part that all of us are. And then we stop separating them out. And so, you know, if you're a healthcare provider tending to the physical side of the patient, right, to not forget that there's the mental health, the emotional health, and the impact of those. And to your point on that whole piece of mental health data, you know, like I said, we gather a lot of data in the Department of Health, and suicide would be the number one reason that we lose young people. But the highest number of suicides that we have in our state are the working adult and the 50 to 60 year old. It is a forgotten population that I think probably in that generation, I was in that generation, that we didn't talk about, we didn't normalize the conversations around mental health and emotional health struggles. And I appreciate that schools and colleges, they're just normalizing that, right? So it's normal for young people to consider that mental health and tending to self-care and reaching out when you're struggling is being wired in as part of the normal, which I absolutely appreciate. It's been happening in this generation. But in my generation, we didn't talk about that. And so one of the precursors to higher risk for suicide we have found in our data is a diagnosis of a chronic illness. So just as we were talking about diabetes, right? So as we're handing out the diagnoses that we do day in and day out, you have diabetes, you have heart disease, you have high cholesterol. We hand these diagnoses out from one patient to the next. Do we really consider what it means for the patient to receive that particular diagnosis? So if you got to receive the diagnosis of diabetes, let's just stay in that realm for a little bit. 55 years old, you have diabetes now. For me, I look at that and go, okay, we can manage this together. We can do this. We'll get you on a healthy diet, help you lose, you know, 10 pounds or get you feeling a lot better. You'll do well. But if your experience in your family history, let's just say, was that your mother lost her legs to diabetes or had to go on dialysis or whatever that is, suddenly that diagnosis and the perspective which it brings is completely different than me as the provider, what I think it is. And if we can start handing out diagnoses with the thought about what is received on the other end, just an awareness. And I fully confess that wasn't an awareness for me until I started hearing about our data on one of the precursors is that diagnosis of a chronic illness of some sort. And that the working adult and older adults are our highest number of suicides. And it is something to take note of. And I'm going to put a shameless plug here for my sister agency of Department of Social Services. They have a new helpline called 988. 911 is when you need an emergency call. 988 is when you need any mental health help. For teenagers, college students, you can text, you can call. I would love 988 to be one of those things that people are just as familiar with 988 as they are with 911. And, you know, sharing that with my fellow colleagues to talk to patients about, but also sharing with teachers and healthcare providers that 988 is also for you, right? We pour into students, we pour into patients, people who pour energy into others need to also know that it's okay to pour energy into yourself. And it's okay to tend to yourself and have some self-care. And the resources that you also make available for your patients and your students are the same resources that you're also are there and exist for you as well.
Great. 988 throughout South Dakota, when you or someone you know may be experiencing a mental health crisis, that's a number to reach out to. Good information. We'll get that out. You know, I remember as you were talking, I was thinking about a provider I was talking to who was working at a clinic and had a child with his mom present with a broken arm. He said, at the same time I was dealing with a broken arm, I was also dealing with mom's depression. She was a single parent. She had all these things going on. And this is one more thing that she had to stop and deal with, not sure how to pay for it, all those sorts of things. So although the provider thought he had one patient, really he had two. Yeah, interesting. So what are you most proud of? You've talked a lot about what the South Dakota Department of Health is doing, sort of how communities are responding. What are you most proud of during your year and a half as Secretary of Health?
I think what is probably excited me the most over this last year is not only shoring up the amount of data that the amount of data we get and the amount of data we share with others. We need to share our story. We need to find those who are rowing the boat with us. We need to partner with the people who need this information and be generous with that information to whoever is interested and can be a part of the solution. And then I think we've become much better at taking that data and putting it into action. You know, we gather a lot of data, but we weren't necessarily making our decisions based on it. Well, you know, if this population is struggling, and so for instance, We have the first compilation that we have ever done. We call it the American Indian Data Book, which is South Dakota data and the comparisons between two populations that are the predominant populations in South Dakota. And that data has never been compiled until this year. And if you were to go on our website where this is housed, and we've been sharing this information very liberally, there's 2-3 pages into this data book is a graph, and it's got red and blue lines in it. And the blue line has a number, an arrow pointing down at 80. And it's got a little arrow that points down to that little graph of 80. We lose about 50% of white South Dakotans by age 80. Okay. And then you'll look at a set of red numbers, and there's an arrow that points down to the number 58. We lose 50% of our Native Americans by age 58. So 22-year disparity between how old South Dakotans live. We live to a pretty ripe old age if you happen to be white South Dakotan. You do not live to a ripe old age if you're Native American. And that, you know, one of the top 5 causes of death in South Dakota for white population is Alzheimer's, but that's not for Native Americans because they don't live that long.
Yeah, sobering statistics.
Yeah, bring in the data to making decision making. And then for me, telling the story over and over again. You know, if I know this information and I don't share it to where it becomes the place of influence, then I haven't done my job as well. So I have traveled all over the state, Any platform that gives me a spot to visit, I'm going to share this information with. And because if I'm the watchman on the wall and I don't put the call out that's saying that these are the things that were going on here, then it's on me to have not shared this information in a way that influences and impacts healthcare for the better in South Dakota.
Right. Well, we're certainly very thankful that you came on and sort of shared some of this information with us. I've learned a lot today. Is there anything else that you want to cover during our time together?
Well, actually, currently we're in a rural healthcare assessment analysis. So we're doing, taking a few months here to do an environmental scan of the current state of healthcare accessibility. So the demographics, where is the workforce at? What's going to be happening? Are they going to be retiring in the next few years? Where is the gaps going to be? What is current status and where's the gaps going to be and how are we going to bend that trajectory a little bit? So we're doing that analysis right here, right now in the midst of this. And we're hoping to have that report put out with the analysis, but also some grant funding opportunities when it's all said and done to help us bend the trajectory of rural healthcare delivery. You know, it's one of those things that there's no easy answer, and healthcare is kind of in a period of a little bit of pain and suffering right now. It's got a bit of an angst to it. You know, but that's also the flip side of it is that's when innovation happens. Creative things happen because of angst. You know, if things are status quo and it's all fine and dandy and sunshine and butterflies, then there's no impetus to change whatsoever. But it's when things become a little bit more painful, a little bit more pressure cooker-like, then innovation and creative minds start at that point. And that's when the fun starts. So, you know, I love healthcare right now because right now creative is the game and the innovative is the key. So I think it's a fantastic time to be in healthcare. And, you know, if anyone is out there listening, thinking about a healthcare career, it's a great time to be in healthcare right now. You're going to do some innovative, creative things that weren't thought of 10 and 15 and 20 years ago.
Great. Thanks so much for your time today. I've enjoyed the conversation. I've loved connecting with you. Secretary Melissa Magstaff, the Secretary of Health for the state of South Dakota. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to meet you as well, and you have a good rest of your day.
Health on the Map is a production of Mount Marty University Nursing in cooperation with Riverfront Broadcasting. To learn more about Mount Marty, South Dakota's Catholic University, visit mountmarty.edu/nursing.